Local candidates come out swinging before the primary election in a series of televised debates. Aetna is pulling out of the Obamacare exchange right here in Florida. And a mysterious shipwreck could reveal some clues about the lost Fort Caroline colony. Some of the stories making headlines this week. Good Friday morning and live from Studio 5. This is First Coast Connect on 89.9. Thanks for listening. I'm Melissa Ross. We are always live at 9. Subscribe to the podcast on iTunes and watch the show now too with video on demand at our partner TVJax.com. Just ahead, all of the news of the week with our Friday roundtable. You can get on the line now at 549-2937. Then later, Jacksonville First Lady Molly Curry on An Evening of Promise, a gala for Nemours Children's. Plus, comedian Pablo San Francisco here in the studio. All of that ahead. But first, a very busy news week, and we've got that Friday feeling as we welcome A.G. Gankarski of Florida Politics. Good morning.
Good morning.
Tim Gibbons, editor of the Jacksonville Business Journal.
Good to be here.
Local blogger Fred Matthews.
Good morning, Melissa.
And our own WJCT reporter Ryan Bank.
Good morning.
And lots to talk about. News about a mysterious Florida shipwreck that could be linked to the lost Fort Caroline colony here in Jacksonville, to what Aetna's Obamacare pullout means for healthcare consumers across Florida. But we begin the hour with our top story, debates, debates, and more debates this week in Jacksonville. Candidates for this area's state attorney and for Congress took to the stage at JU this week for a series of debates in advance of the August 30th primary election, where a slew of names are on the ballot. Now, in a moment, we're going to talk about the state attorney debate and the one with the top-tier candidates for Congressional District 4. But first, a look back at last night's matchup over the CD5 seat, featuring embattled incumbent Corrine Brown and her challengers Al Lawson and L.J. Holloway. Lots to talk about here, and we'll go to your calls in a moment at 549-2937. That's 549-2937. Or go online to wjctnews.org/firstcoastconnect. Email, tweet us, weigh in on Facebook. A.G. Gankarski, let's begin with you. After last night's televised debate, Corrine Brown spoke about the 22-count federal indictment that is pending against her and her battle for re-election. This seat, of course, has generated a lot of controversy over the years. Al Lawson from Tallahassee mounting a very credible challenge to Ms. Brown. How do you think she did in the debate?
The debate was her playing defense. They talked about policy positions, but it was really anticlimactic compared to the referendum on Corrine Brown's personal issues, Corrine Brown's one door for education, Corrine Brown's inability to retain lawyers to defend her in a one door for education case. So that really was the point of the debate rather than, sort of a tepid recitation of policy positions. And after the debate was when it really got interesting, because there's a post-debate press conference where Corrine Brown cursed into a live mic that you might have seen on your TV news. She compared her situation to a Peyton Place witch hunt. She again addressed she again addressed the issue that she didn't have money for her defense. She found it challenging to run a campaign and run a legal defense at the same time. She basically looked like a defeated, tired, broken old politician. It was epic.
Fred Matthews, this has been a very difficult campaign season for Corrine Brown. Can she survive these controversies swirling around her?
If getting your name mentioned in every single local news cycle there is, every single day, all the way up to Election Day is any indication, it's almost like she's the local equivalent of Trump on the national level. Every single news cycle gets her mentioned.
22 counts can do that.
That's it. It's hard. It's still, believe it or not, for many people, hard to call. I had the pleasure, I guess you could call it that, of being with Congresswoman Brown and L.J. Holloway in two forums this week, and they still turned out the same way. Corrine Brown at a veterans forum earlier in the week was asked the question, the first question out of the box from a citizen, what are you going to do if you get and before the young lady could get convicted out, Congresswoman Brown launched into a tirade. And the only word you could use was unhinged. And the questioner was just left there with a mouth open when you're just kind of amazed that after all this time, a pat answer would have been fine.
Tim Gibbons, Corrine Brown, of course, is a fighter. But as Fred said, name recognition and dominating the news cycle, it could result in a closer contest than some might anticipate. Al Lawson is still an unknown name for the most part here in Jacksonville.
It is, there's that question, as with Trump, of the old adage of all press is good press. Is that true? At some point, does the overwhelming press of negative attention actually just, sway things? And you do end up with Corinne Brown is not running so much on policy or position. She's basically running against the indictment, and that there's no good way of doing that.
And Ryan Bank, Corinne Brown is now apparently without legal counsel as she faces federal prosecutors. She's gone through three different legal teams in the last few weeks.
Well, and I think we talked about this earlier before the show, where it just seems like she may not want to take a plea deal, and so that's why she keeps cycling through different counsels. I also wanted to touch on the idea that she's sort of using the playbook of Donald Trump, dominating the news with negative headlines, and whether or not all press is good press, we're not sure about that. But we also have to look at Al Lawson and see he's sort of playing the Hillary Clinton game and trying to take some Republican voters. And get their support.
Yeah, and AG Gankarski, Al Lawson, trying to get not only Republican votes, but Republican money.
Yeah, and this is the thing. Susie Wiles, the Florida co-chair of the Donald Trump campaign, has been introducing Al Lawson around town, acting as what she calls a conduit, as a friend. Ballard Partners, the firm for which Susie Wiles works. Brian Ballard gave $1,000 to the campaign. U.S. Sugar and other PACs that give almost exclusively to Republicans gave to the Al Lawson campaign. Democrats have to ask themselves, is Al Lawson a Republican Trojan horse? That is a salient question, and it's one that's been obscured and all of the lurid drama over Corinne Brown's indictment.
And it's ironic because sitting on the other side, quietly, waiting for this to get over, is Glo Smith, who is a...
The Republican in this race.
Republican in this race, who's a devotee of Jennifer Carroll. And that is where you would think the Republicans are simply would nest their money. But that's not the case here. Al Lawson is sort of the show horse to get this done. And that is the part that fuels the Corinne Brown camp.
We'll go to your calls in a moment at 549-2937. Meanwhile, it's a sort of a reverse situation in Congressional District 4. There is a Democrat filed in that race to replace retiring Congressman Andrew Crenshaw. But in this primary cycle, all of the attention right now is on the Republican side. Another debate this week between the top-tier candidates to replace Crenshaw, Tim, as mainly John Rutherford and Hans Tansler III, son of the late mayor, have been hurling accusations at the front runner Rutherford in that contest.
That is such an interesting contest. And it does actually show the idea of, one-party districts where basically the primary is going to be the election. I mean, sure, there will be an actual election fight, but it's going to come down in CD4 to, what Republican comes out. I think that race has gotten a little bit nastier than people expected.
Yeah. And let's talk about that for a moment. Hans Tansler appeared on this program the other day. John Rutherford has appeared on the show. So has Lake Ray. Another candidate, Bill McClure, will appear Monday. This morning, Lake Ray received the Times Union's endorsement in this race. Ryan Bank, however, he is not leading in polling. A lot of that due to Rutherford's name recognition over the years as sheriff.
Yeah. And I read the endorsement and I think it makes a lot of sense. I mean, if you look at which person is more qualified to lead legislatively, I mean, the experience has to lie with Lake Ray. I mean, he has experience getting lots of legislation through the Florida House. He has experience working with people on the other side of the aisle. It's interesting that, at least for me, it's interesting to see that all of the Republican support is being thrown behind Rutherford, and that Lake Ray is sort of playing third fiddle to Tansler and Rutherford.
And we'll go to your calls as we discuss the top headlines of the week with our Friday Media Roundtable at 549-2937. A.G. Gankarski, John Rutherford, it seems his strategy is to just make it through August 30th with his narrative intact, and if the polling holds, he will cruise to election in this seat.
Yeah, and I gotta say, that debate Wednesday night was weak sauce. It was like, it should have been sponsored by Salmonex. I was there and I almost fell asleep on Nate Monroe's shoulder from the Times Union. But
That's a picture right there.
You know, let's break this down a little bit. You've got two high-power teams of consultants here. On the Rutherford side, you've got data targeting, Tim Baker, Brian Hughes, working in various capacities. Hughes is on the pack. On the Tanzler side, you've got Brett Doster, Frontline Strategies. These guys are fighting in GOP race after GOP race throughout the district. Hans Tanzler has spent a lot of money. He's got $200,000 coming in from a pack called the Conservative Outsider Pack. He spent $200,000 of his own money. He's basically at 10% in the polls. He's not getting traction despite these attacks, which paint John Rutherford as, you know, a jihadi sympathizer, as soft on guns, as a liberal.
Liberal John Rutherford.
And, you know, when I asked Hans Tanzler why he wasn't getting traction in the polls, he said, well, the polls lie. If you're saying that 2 weeks out from an election with public polls and private polls basically saying you're down double digits, you got a problem. Regarding Lake Ray and the Times Union endorsement, he's the Bill Bishop 2015 of this race, because Bill Bishop in March 2015 got the Times Union endorsement. He didn't have the money to do anything with it. Lake Ray's in the same spot. He can't buy media. What's he going to do, a sponsored Facebook post? Big whoop, because the 65-year-olds voting in a Republican primary are not playing on Facebook. He needs to be able to buy TV, and he can't get there.
AG, you've got to be more forthcoming in these forums. Yeah. Seriously.
I was
just a little
actually.
Tired.
I had thought, honestly, at the beginning, I had thought this would be more of a Rutherford Ray race. And to have, you know, Tanzler basically be a Tanzler Rutherford race, it is, I don't know, surprised me a
well,
little bit.
Well, how much of that? Let's discuss this. Are people responding to that name on the ballot because they remember mayor?
It's pure name recognition.
What
I find fascinating as well is that.
I disagree.
You disagree. It's you think it's conservative, hard right conservative?
No, it's dog whistle marketing. And Lake Ray has upset the local Republican Party. He was party chair for 6 to 8 months. Mm-hmm. He brought in no money. And conveniently enough, at a GOP straw poll this month, he got left off the ballot.
Accidentally.
It led to a confrontation inside the building.
How could that have happened?
It led to Ray supporters confronting Rutherford supporters in the parking lot. It was bedlam. And, you know, Lake Ray feels like he's been jobbed out. But,
okay. Let me just jump in quickly, because we need to make note of one other debate from the week before we go to the phones. It was the barn burner, and there have been a series of them, in the state attorney's race between incumbent Angela Corey and her state attorney challengers, Melissa Nelson and Wes White. This race has gotten particularly contentious, Fred, and with the oldest magazine in the nation, The Nation, running an article this week calling Angela Corey the cruelest prosecutor in America. It's the latest in a series of long knives cuts against the incumbent that have really weakened her chances at reelection. Your thoughts?
It will be a tough sledding for her these last few weeks before the primary to pull this off. I really will be interested in seeing how she's going to pull this off, because even those stalwarts, those law and order stalwarts among the voting community are standing back. A lot of that has to do with her hard line against working with community groups to from just about everything. And again, it's just not working for her. And Melissa Nelson just has come off a lot better. She's certainly been able to raise the money, as I'm sure AG can confirm. She's raising the money. She looks good on camera. And we can't put that aside. I mean, she looks good on camera. She's not abrasive, and it is a hard thing for Prosecutor Corey to hold back, you know, after being such a hardliner, conservative, law and order, let's lock them up. And again, when that article came out about how many, it's running on Facebook almost in rotation, mm-hmm. about how many juveniles have been prosecuted as adults, and the Christian case is running now regularly. Fernandez case. It's hard for her to get around that now.
And I would say, too, in addition to all the negative press, the quote-unquote establishment of this city has thrown its weight behind Melissa Nelson.
That really, more than anything, is I guess, both a cause and a sign of how effective she is. And Fred mentioned the money, which, again, AG probably has at his fingertips. But clearly winning the type of people who in the past would look at a law and order prosecutor and support them and going, no, we're done with Angela.
Ryan.
Well, I was going to say that, you know, when it comes down to So last night I watched all three debates in a row because I didn't catch them in prime time because I hate myself. And,
a binge watcher. Yeah, here.
I watched it all in a row. I'm too used to Netflix. And so I'm looking at these candidates and I'm saying that they're up there on the stage. There is almost zero discussion of policy, and there's almost zero difference between these candidates and what they say they're going to do. There's a tone difference. There's a pivoting to different sections of voters. But at the end of the day, I don't know how it's going to be any different.
You know, I'm going to take issue with what Ryan said. You know, Melissa Nelson's actually talking about criminal justice reform in sort of the Koch brothers kind of conservative way. She wants to make tweaks to the system. Angela Corey believes that the way it's been done for 48 years is the way it should be done until the end of time, is sort of the Catholic Church approach to, you know, criminal justice. And Wes White, they must have gotten him out of a time machine from 1965. You know, he talks in the abstract about, we don't need a weak-willed, lily-livered
state attorney.
But that's
tone.
It is tone, but it's also a lack of substance. And there is a difference between the candidates in that. You've got one candidate that wants to move criminal justice reform. You've got one candidate who represents the absolute status quo. And you've got one candidate who's an absolute demagogue. I do want to say something about that debate on TV, though. The WJXT debate was not on television, and it doesn't look like it's going to be. And this is nettling that Angela Corey supporters, such as Steve Zender from Fraternal Order Police. Hmm. He's asking questions. WJXT is not committing to air the debate on TV. They believe it's a conspiracy against their candidate because WJXT had a poll saying that Corey won that debate with Nelson in a close second and Wes White trailing.
Well, let's go to everyone's calls right now as we discuss all the debates from the week. Did you watch them on TV or maybe streamed the one that didn't air on the web? What are your thoughts? 549-2937. Bill is on the South Side with us. Hey, Bill, do you have that Friday feeling? Good morning. Hi, Bill.
Is it Bill or Gil?
Oh, I'm sorry. They told me your name's Bill.
No. It's Gil.
It's Gil. Gil. Hi, Gil.
Yes, it's the same Gil that calls in all the time.
Oh, well.
I had called in to talk with Hans Tansler and find out why he was trying to get rid of the EPA. I already knew the answer to that, but when you consider that the EPA is responsible for water and air quality, and that affects all of us because we only need to have air, water, and food are the only three things we need to survive, getting rid of an agency that does oversight on our food and on our air and water seems like a really good thing. But it's not different than any of the other Republican presidential candidates, because every one of them wanted to get rid of the air, the EPA, and a number of other federal agencies. And what this is the resurrection of the John Birch Society. Fred Koch was actually the father of Charles and David Koch, and that is what they want to do because they will save them money, but it is putting all of us at risk.
All right. Thanks, Gil. And, you know, Tansler was on this program yesterday, and not only does Tansler want to cut the EPA, the Department of Labor, and the IRS by 50%, he wants to eliminate completely the Department of Education and the Department of Housing and Urban Development.
Yes.
A lot of people did call in and challenge him in particular on his environmental stance, especially given that he used to head up the St. Johns River Water Management District. And Tansler walked back some of those positions. But Fred, what about Gil's call?
Well, I mean, that's it. He's running. His opening TV commercials had him running as an ultra-conservative. He's on the horse. He's riding through the sunset. He's saying all the great things he's going to do.
There was like a shotgun or something.
Okay.
Telling Obama to get out of town with the shotgun.
Okay.
Right, all of that.
Yeah. But now all
isn't he leaving anyway?
But all of,
he has to leave.
Because of the shotgun.
But what is shocking here is that that's not the Hans Tansler we saw and heard this week. We have he was very low-toned, very low-key.
Very low-key,
yeah. He's walking back on issues. Well, maybe I shouldn't have. That was, he did the same thing in the debates, and he sits here with you, and he does the same thing.
His some of it back to a point. He did, and it was interesting to see that.
But the important is that his tone was not the tone of a guy who is out there winning, is going to take the fight to Rutherford.
his Tantor's a fake. He is an Ortega cowboy.
Whoa.
You know, he's putting on the shtick to try to impress people in Nassau County and St. John's County. It's not real. He's basically wearing, he's Ted Yoho with a mask on. You know, he's basically posturing for the rubes. That's his position. And if Hans Tantor went to Washington, he wouldn't get any of the stuff done because it is so far out of the mainstream and he's above 60 and he'd be there for 6 years tops and then be done. So it's almost meaningless to talk about these policy prescriptions. It's just fodder for the rubes.
Well, in some ways, this is almost a microcosm of the Republican Party primary system, where you have candidates who are trying to triangulate in some weird way of, we have to be ultra-right, but we can't go too far to turn people off. But, you know, listening to Rutherford on your show the other day, that was a much more conservative-sounding Rutherford than I think, you know, we were used to when he was sheriff. But
one thing we didn't get to when he was here was, at one of the forums, Rutherford called the Black Lives Matter movement a hate group.
It was at the debate, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Well, he did it at the debate at JU.
Well, let me go to a few more calls. Julie in Atlantic Beach. Hi, Julie. What are you thinking?
I have a question, actually, too. But one is, let's say Corrine Brown is elected, but then she is found guilty and goes to jail, which I think could be in her cards. Then what would happen? Would there have to be another election, or would there, does she have like a right hand person that would step in?
It would have to be a special election, is my understanding, Julie.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
All right. So they would have to be. All right. And then, which is the person from the city council who a couple of years ago wanted the mother who was nursing to be considered like pornography?
That'd be Clay Yarborough, and it looks like he's going to be in a state house.
Okay.
He's running for the state house from that district in Arlington that he hails from. Yeah.
House District 12.
All right.
Okay, thank you. Chep at the Beaches. Hi, Chep. Is it Chep?
Hey, guys.
Hey.
Yes, ma'am. I'm here.
Go ahead.
Yes, I wanted to say something about John Rutherford. I am a Republican, but I am against the death penalty, and I was very impressed that he is against the death penalty. I'm also pro-Second Amendment, and I think he's very pro-Second Amendment, so I'll more than likely be voting for Mr. Rutherford. And then the other thing is, I haven't been able to watch much of the debates, but my son overdosed on fentanyl 7 months ago. And
I'm sorry to hear that.
Yes, ma'am. But in West Virginia this week, they had 26 overdoses in 4 hours. And I'm wondering, being the case that opiates are the number one cause of unintentional deaths in America, and you can understand why I'm concerned about it. What are the candidates saying about it? I'm not hearing it.
Yeah.
I'm not hearing
Hasn't come up a whole lot in these local races. You're right, even though it's a big national issue and it's claimed a lot of lives nationally.
The thing about it is, it's hard for me to imagine that you're, as bad as it is, that you or your guests don't know anybody or any family members that are dealing with this.
Sure.
It's everywhere.
It is. You're absolutely right. Yeah, thank you for that.
Well, you do, some of us do have family members and know family members and friends that are dealing with this. But the issue at hand, for one party, it comes down to personal responsibility. For the other party, it comes down to how can they extend the further government help in terms of insurance, medical insurance, because the families that have insurance that can take care of their relatives and their children to get them into care are okay. But for the other group of families who don't have that access to insurance, who don't have that cash on hand, it simply becomes a problem.
And thank you for pointing that out, Fred, because we need to note that also making headlines this week, Aetna is pulling out of the Affordable Care Act, the insurer ending its Obamacare plans in 11 states, including Florida. Now, Aetna warned in July that it would exit the Obama health insurance market if the government challenged its deal to buy rival Humana Inc. This, according to a letter it sent to the Department of Justice. As Fred said, insurance still a spotty affair for millions of Americans. What does this mean for Florida? Ryan Bank, certain counties will be more affected than others, is my understanding.
Definitely. Certain areas of the state are going to be more affected. It's almost like carved up regions here where certain insurance companies reign. But, you know, I think it needs to be said that the issue here with healthcare really comes down to more about cost than it does about coverage. I mean, we're looking at nationwide, we have close to 100% coverage now after Obamacare, and it's not really something that is helping drive down the costs. And then on top of Fred's point here, when we're talking about even if you do have insurance, we have such horrible doctor shortages here in Florida. We have a general doctor shortage, and then on top of that, when you're talking about mental health professionals, we have an even larger shortage. In the Jacksonville area, there is only two addiction specialists, specially mm-hmm. trained doctors in the Jacksonville area, mm-hmm. who can treat these kinds of addictions. So, I mean, it's a huge problem.
You know, there's something to be said for personal agency when it comes to taking opiates, and there's also something to be said about the working white lower middle class basically falling into despair that breeds this. But that being said, let's look at hospital costs. It's something that Governor Rick Scott has talked about quite a bit, wanting transparency in billing, basically saying there are markups all over the system. If you've had an ER visit and had to pay out of pocket, you know that's the case. You can be charged $15,000 for an EpiPen shot if they do it right. And you know, this is the absurdity that undergirds the whole thing. Of course that does not make you money. Not because, you know, the model itself has necessarily failed, but because the hospital billing model is so inefficient that it's impossible to make money off of this the way it's laid out, and that is a problem.
Tim. I think you can also look at the economic underpinnings of the Affordable Care Act have not worked out the way that people hope they would. The top five insurers in the country are losing money on this because they're getting sicker clients than they expected. I mean, the money coming to the insurance companies to kind of cover shortfalls wasn't as much as they were led to believe it was. So you end up with a situation where we're getting more insurance to more people, but at a higher cost.
And depending on how the election goes in November, the presidential, the House, the Senate, if it goes the Republicans' way, we could see one chain of events. If it goes the Democrats' way, look for a revived discussion of the public option.
When I was going to bring that up, we had Bernie Sanders who came out a day ago who said, look, I told you so. Without having a public option, you take that threat off the table to these insurance companies, they're going to pull out. They have no incentive to stay in if they're losing money. Well, but if you say that we have a public option and people can just leave Aetna and go to a public option, I think the conversation would be a little different.
And that's not Medicare for everyone. It would be Medicare, in effect, for more people under the age of 65.
Right. One of the things, of course, one of the key parts about the ACA and with Aetna and other insurance companies is that they were promised at the top end that they would get the government subsidy that would allow them to offset the losses that were inevitably going to come with the increase of more sick people coming into this. But since the Congress, a Republican-dominated Congress, has fought tooth and nail against ACA, has taken, something like 50 votes against it, in the House to try to dismantle it, there was no way that the money, the subsidization, was going to ever come for the insurance companies to offset the losses that they're going to incur, and that was one of the biggest issues with having it. If you're going to have a for-profit company into this deal, they are going to look for profit. When the profit's not there, they're going to leave.
That's what I find interesting about the Aetna Humana thing, where people are kind of positioning this as, they blackmailed the government that they're going to pull out if the merger wasn't allowed. Their argument has been, we need this merger to have the scale to actually make money at.
Ryan.
The spoiler alert, it doesn't matter who's elected president in this election, we aren't going to have a public option. The House is not going to be...
No, they don't.
The House is not going to turn Democratic. No. There's but even Bernie. Some questions about the Senate.
Bernie's,
and it doesn't matter what the rhetoric is, we are not going to have
a public option. Bernie's talking about a revolution.
Bernie's looking at new $500,000 homes right now on the lakeshore up there in the Northeast.
Time of year.
Okay, speaking of water, a private treasure salvage company says it's found a shipwreck off the coast of Cape Canaveral. It could be linked to the lost French colony of Fort Caroline here in Jacksonville.
France isn't France anymore. Mm.
Global Marine Exploration Inc. found three French bronze cannons and a French granite monument adorned with that country's coat of arms. Mm. The TU reports the monument, similar to the one French Captain Jean Ribault put near the mouth of the St. John's River in 1562 as he staked his nation's claim to Florida. The whereabouts have been a mystery for centuries. This is a pretty cool story.
It is.
It's a big find.
I think it's neat. But the question of the week is, and for you French majors, is it pronounced...
That's none of us.
Is it pronounced Ribault or is it Ribault?
Oh, gosh,
I don't speak
Fred.
French. I speak freedom.
And finally, it's our look at the strange, bizarre, and just plain ridiculous AG from
the
around
win.
The state. Luckily, never a shortage of material. Here it is for you right now, only in Florida. Only in Florida does going postal mean just throwing everybody's mail into the trash. Yes, a Florida postal worker in Lee County was caught on camera Saturday dumping hundreds of pieces of mail in a dumpster.
All of them freelance writer checks.
She can be seen in surveillance video driving her truck right up to the dumpster before dumping the entire bin into it. Among the mail, postcards, payments, bills, AG's freelance check, and about 400 business flyers belonging to a local realtor. Oh, that just sucks.
If it's not an Amazon shipment, really, does it? Who gets mail anymore?
Yeah. The realtor is the real victim here.
Yeah. Speaking of interesting videos, only in Florida are robbery suspects caught on camera twerking in court to impress the judge. Mm. Down in Miami, 30-year-old Calvin Griffith began busting out his best dance moves when he appeared in bond court last week. He's suspected of car theft. He started twerking to gain the attention of Judge Catherine Pooler. The video is online. He's actually really good, good dancer, but Judge Pooler not amused, and she set Griffin's bond at above $18,000.
But what would it have been if he hadn't twerked?
I know. It could have been worse. Finally, even though he had no Florida connections we know of, we now stop to pay our respects to the late John McLaughlin, the longtime host of the McLaughlin Group, which of course aired right here on WJCT television for decades, died this week after an incredible 34-year run hosting his show without ever missing even one single program. Not once. And by the way, who can forget Dana Carvey's immortal John McLaughlin impersonation on Saturday Night Live? We can't. Oh, and we just so happen to have a little clip of it. Let's listen.
From the nation's capital, the McLaughlin Group, an unrehearsed, hastily assembled program presenting inside opinions and forecasts on major issues of the day. Now here's the moderator, John McLaughlin.
Issue number one, high noon. Sodom says no, Bush says go. How long will it last? Pat Buchanan.
Well, George Bush is playing hardball here, and I think we could possibly see...
Wrong! Helen O'Cliff!
Well, if I were George Bush...
Wrong! Jeff Jamundo!
Well, Bush is weighing his political clout against...
Wrong! Issue two, Gorbachev endorses Bush. Politically motivated, Gorby friend or foe, Morton Kondracki.
Well, Gorbachev is playing a very interesting...
Wrong! Pat Buchanan!
I think the Soviets are in very good position.
Wrong! On a scale of 14 to 32, 14 being absolute metaphysical certitude, and 32 being fairly likely, what are the chances of Gorby breaking ranks? Judge Hammond!
Wait... 14 to 32?
Wrong, Maltone!
21?
Wrong! The correct answer is 19.24. You were close, Maltone. Next issue!
Should I start dealing with you guys that
yes,
way?
Yes, that would be
yes,
great.
Please.
I love that man. I miss that man. He was a great host.
Yes, he was. Absolutely. R.I.P. And by the way, they're taping the final episode of the McLaughlin Group in Washington today. It will air soon on WJCT. Meanwhile, they're never wrong. A.G. Gankarski, Ryan Bank, Tim Gibbons, and Fred Matthews. Thanks, guys, so much for being here.
Bye-bye.
Have a good weekend.
We'll be right back.
So you like your chili peppers hot, but how good are you at tasting the difference between a hot habanero and a spicy serrano? I'm Ira Flatow. On the next Science Friday, we look at the spicy science of the chili pepper. Plus, I'll walk through the weird and wacky world of Twitter bots and a Chinese satellite that brings quantum communications to space. It's all on Science Friday from PRI.
Fridays at 2 on 89.9 WJCT.
I'm Jackie Carter, Executive Secretary for Duval County's Emergency Operations Center. Have a plan for home, work, and school. Planning can save you valuable time and money in a disaster. Visit jacksready.com for more information and tune to 89.9, the designated emergency broadcaster for Northeast Florida.
This segment is brought to you by Colo CSX Data Center Hosting Solutions.
Presenting Next Avenue, a website from WJCT created specifically for adults discovering life after 50. Visit us at wjct.org/nextavenue.
Sponsored in part by AARP, Real Possibilities.
Welcome back. Well, next week you can come out and meet Mayor Curry and his wife Molly, and also support a worthy cause at Nemours Children's 4th Annual Gala, An Evening of Promise. We've got a preview right now with Chief Medical Officer Michael Erhardt and Scott Rupert. His family and his son Riley will be a key focus of this event. Gentlemen, thanks for being with us.
Thank you. Pleasure to be here.
Thank you.
And in a moment, Scott, we'll hear about your child, Riley, who's 8 years old. But first, Michael Erhardt, Nemours Children's Specialty Care does just such a fabulous job in this area, treating children. And so this is a good cause. Tell us what's going to be happening.
Well, we're looking forward to a wonderful event at the Comer and sharing a great evening with partners in the community that are there to really support the hard work that goes into taking care of children in need of medical treatment here in Jacksonville and the surrounding area.
And you've got honorary co-chairs Mayor Lenny Curry and Molly Curry. Pretty cool.
We're really excited about that. Talk about a way to really get some community engagement. That's a good place to start.
Absolutely. So, Scott, let's talk about your family. Your son, Riley, is 8 years old, and he was diagnosed with a stage 2 inoperable brain tumor nearly 2 years ago, and he's just completed chemotherapy. What a journey it's been for your family.
It's definitely been a challenge, that's for sure. Through the journey, though, we've met several other family members who have been going through similar things and even a lot worse. So sometimes it's a little humbling to see other people's journeys and learn from them.
And how would you characterize the role Nemours has played in Riley's life?
To be honest, I don't think we would have been able to make it throughout the whole year without them there. From everyone, the registration staff, the doctors, the nurses, the technicians, everyone has helped us all along the way.
And I think that's what makes Nemours such a beloved medical institution, because the vulnerability of children when they're sick, it just breaks your heart. And you're more than a children's hospital. My daughter's been treated there for something pretty minor. It was very gratifying to have the whole culture of the place really wrap its arms around the families when they come in.
Absolutely. Everybody's there to take care of the child and the family. It's not just the child that's sick. The family needs help too. And as Scott has mentioned, it really takes a village to take care of a sick child. And that's what we're here for.
So you really need everyone to support An Evening of Promise. Now, this is coming up not today, but a week from today at the Comer Museum. Couldn't pick a more beautiful location for this gala. What's on the agenda?
Oh, fun, dancing, good food, good times with great friends.
Yeah. And tickets available now, by the way, at nemours.org/eveningofpromise. Scott Rupert, your family will be introduced as honored guests, so it'll be nice to see the spotlight, I would think, on your story.
Yes, we hope to just share the story of Riley and what we've been doing and sharing with everyone and encouraging it to give.
Absolutely. Please mark your calendar for the 4th Annual Evening of Promise, a gala to benefit Nemours Children's Specialty Care. And it's your chance to come out and meet Mayor Lenny Curry and his wife, Molly Curry, honorary co-chairs. This, again, is next Friday night, August 26th, 7 o'clock at the Comer Museum of Art and Gardens. Get your tickets now at nemours.org/Evening of Promise. And thank you so much, Michael Erhardt, Chief Medical Officer, and Scott Rupert, both of you with us this morning. Have a great time, and thanks for sharing it.
Thank you.
And we'll be right back with comedian Pablo Francisco.
on the next Fresh Air, a novel about race, class, and identity from the point of view of the daughter of Afrocentric parents growing up in the 80s. We hear from Asali Solomon, the author of Disgruntled.
One of the things in the novel that's based in truth is that we did go around giving Kwanzaa programs. I would call it Kwanzaa Von Trapp family.
Join us weekdays at noon on 89.9 WJCT. Your community, your world.
Hello, I'm Doug Hansard, and I listen to the Florida Times Union On Demand as read by WJCT Radio Reading Service volunteers. The sound quality is excellent. This is a great asset for people like me, sightless and on the go. The Florida Times Union Daily on the radio reading website at wjct.org/radio reading. Take advantage of it, and while you're there, register as a listener.
If you're looking for the best blues show, look to the Blues Horizon. Each week, join me for the best blues, both classic and contemporary. Blues Horizon, every Monday night at 11 p.m. on WJCT 89.9 FM radio. Take a ride with us to some unknown places of musical light and shade. Blues Horizon, every Monday night at 11 on 89.9 FM. So many roads.
Welcome back. Well, finally, this hour, comedian Pablo Francisco will rock the house tonight at the Comedy Zone. One of the most popular touring comedians in the world, Pablo has earned a rep for his unique talent to weave together a one-of-a-kind arsenal of off-the-wall characters and amazing impressions. We've got a preview right now as we welcome Pablo Francisco and his opening act, Steve Kramer, to the studio. Hey, guys.
Hi, I'm Casey Kasem. Pablo grew up in a small neighborhood. That's right. Here's a bunch of commercials right now before I play a song. I'm Casey. My head is so big, it looks like a cookie jar.
Oh,
that's
my
right.
Gosh.
So reach in and, good morning. Yes.
Nice. Do you even get a word in, Steve?
Or? Oh, yeah. Sometimes I do.
Yeah, sometimes.
It's hard in the morning because I just woke up, had some coffee. I sound like Al Pacino.
Every movie, I play the same character. Only difference is how many times I pinch my nipples.
I got to learn that one.
All right. So how do you come up with, who do you decide to impersonate, first of all? Like, what kind of verbal tics or whatever do they have for you to do them?
Usually, yeah, it happens sometimes that you see, like, their mind's like right now Mark Wahlberg because he's in every movie. So he's like, he produces shows. He's, he produces shows. He's on TV shows. He's in movies. Now it's just
that's your movie trailer voice.
This movie trailer guy, Don LaFontaine, this summer has Brady written all over it.
Why don't they just pay you millions to do those trailers?
You know, it's funny because sometimes they'll pay me good money just to go, Nunkia.
Put it in the pocket, Mike.
And, sometimes he goes, you do me better than I do me. If I was you, I'd be me doing you, doing you.
Oh my gosh. So Wahlberg. Why Wahlberg? He's got like this kind of voice that goes up kind of high.
Hey man, huh? You doing good? Huh? You do. He's in every movie. Now he's doing elementary school announcements. That's what he's doing. Hey, we have Salisbury steak, huh? And no volcanoes at science fair, huh? You doing good? It's usually, Steve will usually come up with it. He'll make fun of it too. And, I kind of learned from him because you need a friend to do it first sometimes.
So you bounce it, you do impressions for each other and kind of work it out that way?
Oh yeah, definitely. We push each other to do. And the thing is, you always try to find out like find the niche with each one, like you were talking about. Like for instance, Matthew McConaughey, he's so relaxed and laid back. You have to drop a Xanax before you do. But he'll fall asleep halfway through a sentence and be like, I always try to live my life by four simple rules.
Have you ever had a celebrity come up and say, oh, I really liked that, or I really hated that you did me that way?
You know, I don't think I've ever met any of the celebrities that I do in person. Have you? You've met Don LaFontaine.
Don LaFontaine went to his house and then went to Aaron Neville. He came off the bus one time, but I took off running because he was like,
he wasn't happy with you?
He sounded like he sounds like a radio station. I was like,
he does, oh my God, that's amazing.
And it looks like he dresses at Baby Gap because he came up with a little tiny shirt. So I took off from there. But other than that, it was just Don LaFontaine.
Brian was really cool about that. So, but
and for people that don't realize, he's the guy that does the and I've heard he gets paid ridiculous sums of money to voice those movie trailers.
Yeah, unfortunately, he passed away. But he told me he goes.
He passed on.
But when I met with him, he was he goes, you know what? I do three of these a day, and I live like a king. I go, wow,
that's amazing.
CSI.
Now let's talk about. Not only are you known for your stand-up, but animation.
We have a show. Yeah, we're working on this show. It's a stand-up meets animation. It's called Here We Go Again. It's an hour special that we're putting together, and it's basically my stand-up comedy with the animation of Steve Kramer.
Nice.
And he puts it all together, and it's his own style, and we'll make fun of Dog the Bounty Hunter, like he's a convicted felon, doesn't have the right to vote, but has every right to come to your house and spray mace in your face. And he'll do the Dog the Bounty Hunter. Give him some doggy.
Here's what we're going to do. We're going to stop in. We're going to break this house down, and then we're going to talk like this. We're going to cuss a bunch. You're going to hear a bunch of beeps, and then we're going to say, all right, now let's pray. Dear Jesus.
That's right.
Oh, my gosh.
He looks like a Barbie doll thrown in a dryer. But anyhow,
let me throw out a few stats about you. 100 million YouTube views around the world. A slew of successful comedy specials, a new show coming out on MTV, right?
Yeah, we got it's with like Netflix and MTV. It's kind of like we're still deciding. We're like in negotiations right now.
Oh, so it could be on Netflix.
It could be on Netflix, and
so I could sit back and watch Pablo for 6 hours straight if I want to.
Yeah, you probably could if you like TiVo me, you know, left and right.
But that's cool. I mean, and. You know, so many comedians come through this area, but you're the first one I think that I've talked to that is also doing animation in conjunction with the stand-up. How did you guys hit on that combo?
Well, I taught myself how to animate.
Yeah.
And my first cartoon was featured at the Just for Laughs Festival in Montreal. Pablo and I met many years ago, about 20 years ago, when I was doing the TV show Hype. He was doing the TV show Mad TV at the time. We became friends, and that we were just like, we always looked for an opportunity to work together. Mm-hmm. When he saw the cartoon, he called me up and he was like, hey, let's start working on this together. And you talked about if we ever ran into somebody that we knew, famous.
Yeah.
I actually, up on stage, I do Ice Ice Baby as Arnold Schwarzenegger. And last year we actually ran in.
How'd you come up with that?
I just come up with crazy ideas, just sitting around being an idiot. Yeah. Well, see, I can do it on this thing right here. Watch this one. I go.
He's doing this on an iPad, by the way.
Bang, 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 ba ba bang, bang. Bang, 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 ba ba bang, bang. Hi, hi.
Now he's mixing it.
Collaborate and listen on at the back with the brand. Let me mention something. Come to hell, let me tightly flow like a harpoon daily and nightly. Will it ever stop, y'all? Down now. Look at my day, the blouse of the robe. Hi, 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 hi. Hi, 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 hi.
He put you, you know what? You're getting older now.
A big hand for that one.
You're getting older now. It's not, I'll be back. It's out my back. But anyhow, there we go.
No, I've heard you're so high energy on stage. People are just, they can't get enough of that. Well, I mean, it's rapid fire, yeah?
Sometimes, yeah, you know, it depends how much booze that and all that, you know, sometimes you got to roofie yourself, because sometimes we want to do too much with Bill Cosby. But yeah, it all depends.
Oh, you're avoiding that. Yeah. Do you avoid controversy, social commentary?
A little bit of the politics,
light?
Yeah.
You avoid all that?
No, it does come around, but, you know, we'll make fun of it a little bit, but, you know, not.
Are you going to do Donald Trump tonight?
He
Hillary
can do
Clinton?
Donald Trump. He can do it. Forget you, you loser.
There's like nobody's off limits with him.
You're a loser. You're terrible. I hate you. But Donald, I'm your mother. Oh. It's going to be huge.
I don't know why his mom sounds like Marge Simpson.
If Donald Trump was on the series The Simpsons, it would be the first time in the entire episode that the person's skin color would be accurate.
He has any orange? He's orange.
Do you do any women?
Do I do any women?
Are you going to do Hillary?
You know, I can't do Hillary. I can't do that. But
is it harder to do a woman? I would, you know?
Yeah, I can do a girl that I was with last night. She said, I will never, ever take the place of your mama, boy. But anyhow. Let's go to the clip. But you know what? I could do Sarah Vaughan, maybe. Oh, Joan Rivers. There you go. Do it, Joan. Oh, oh, my God. Oh, Willie Nelson. Oh, there you go.
He's Pablo Francisco and Steve Kramer opening up for him tonight. They're partners in comedy and animation. Give yourselves a hand, guys. That was really funny.
Right,
go to comedyzone.com for tickets and catch the show tonight and tomorrow night. Thanks, you guys. Have
Thank
fun
you.
While you're
Thank
in
you
town.
For having us.
Well, that's our show. Thanks to all of our guests and callers. Our producer is Kevin Merchart. Michelle Corum runs the board. The show theme composed and performed by the Jacksonville Symphony's Pyotr Chepchik. Make sure to subscribe to the Daily Podcast on iTunes and watch the show with video on demand at our partner TVJax.com. Diane Reams up next with a look at the week's top national news stories. I'm Melissa Ross, and you're listening to First Coast Connect on 89.9 WJCT FM Jacksonville. Your community, your world. We'll be right back here again at 9 a.m. Monday. Have a great weekend.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.